My first guest this morning is Mary Doerr, producer and director of She's Beautiful When She's Angry, a documentary about the feminist movement now showing at CCA. And later on in the show, I'll have Chef David Sundberg and brewer James Warren of Blue Corn Brewery talking about cask beer in an upcoming event they're having. So please stay tuned for the second half. Welcome, Mary.
Yes, hi. Nice to talk to you.
You're in New York this morning, right?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you for
being
with us.
Brooklyn, to be specific.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah, exactly. We're chauvinists here.
Right. It's not just New York. It's the borough.
Yeah.
She's Beautiful When She's Angry chronicles the women's liberation movement in the U.S. from 1966 to 1971. And it combines a huge amount of historic film footage with contemporary interviews with key figures in the movement and a few, some dramatizations of events. It's kind of a fast-paced and fascinating, to me, primer on the feminist movement. Tell me how you got interested in doing this film, Mary, and how it came about.
Well, it's a long story, and I'll try to make it brief for your audience, I started writing grants for this 21 years ago, and I can tell you how long it took, because that's when my sons were born, so I knew I did the grants before they were born. And it took a very long time to raise the money, because one of the reasons that really inspired me to make the film, to get to your main point, is I've made a lot of historical documentaries, both as independent films and also a lot of productions for television on historical subjects, and it basically made me kind of crazy that no one considered the history of the women's movement to be that important, that there were really fantastic loads and loads and dozens of films on the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, the environmental movement, but the women's movement has been sort of neglected, and I wanted to make a film that would be very broad and hopefully popular and including people and not sort of just an academic text. I wanted it to be popular, and I wanted to have a lot of people see it, because that movement deserves a lot of respect, and it really hasn't gotten as much as it deserves.
And where did the funding come for the project?
Well, slowly and agonizingly, we didn't really get the funding until 2010. We shot some of the interviews back in 2000, which is why, luckily, we have the wonderful interview with Ellen Willis, who passed a few years later. But we didn't really go into full-time production until 2010, when we got our first grant from a patron, basically, an individual. And then we got many more. If you look at the credits, we've gotten a lot of money from foundations and a lot from individuals, a real mixture from all over the country. It's been great.
Has any other film in your career been so long in the making?
Actually, yes. I'm sorry to say. No, actually, nothing as long as this. I mean, I worked on another feature doc on called The Good Fight about the Lincoln Brigade, and that was 5 years also of full-time filmmaking. But this one was actually harder, because that one we got an NEH grant for, and in this one, it's just been pieced together. You know, I've worked on it full-time, but there were many times when I couldn't advance, like in terms of shooting and things, because of lack of funding.
Right. Did you ever sort of lose hope that you were ever going to get this done?
No, I got discouraged.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I never lost hope. And I basically let myself get deeply in debt to finish it, because uh-huh. we were so close and I was refusing to. So I have a lot of unpaid credit cards, but that's classic in the documentary field. I am not unique.
Well, thank God you had credit, because
yeah.
this film is amazing, amazing. Mary, and personally, I'm 58, and so I'm a little behind that curve. In other words, I didn't get involved in the women's movement until I was in college, maybe around 1975, when I joined NOW, the local NOW group in Denton, Texas, and, did consciousness-raising groups and that kind of thing. How old are you, and where do you fit into the history of the women's movement?
I'm just a little bit younger than the women in the film. I'm 63. So when I joined, I was there a couple of years before you, around 73. My first group was a consciousness-raising group that was studying our bodies ourselves. And that was really my first feminist moment, because I had been very active in the anti-war movement before that, as even a high school student. And it was revelatory for me. And I still, early copy of Our Bodies Ourselves plays a cameo in the film. I still have my original copy with the name of all the women in my group inscribed inside the front cover, because it just changed my life. And they were just such amazing people. And you can see from the film that they, have kept it up all these years. It's amazing.
Right. I think they were called the Boston Women's Health Collective.
That's right.
Something like that. For those who don't know that book, Our Bodies, Ourselves was the first book that described women's bodies in women's words with very explicit and graphic descriptions and pictures.
Illustrations.
Mm-hmm. Of women's bodies. So women, because before that, women really didn't know much about their own bodies. And those things weren't discussed. And I too have a very early copy of Our Bodies, Ourselves, and it's still available. In the film, I think they said it's in its ninth printing now, and it's been printed all over the world, translated into dozens of other languages, basically liberating women to be in charge of their own bodies. And that's just one tiny piece of what this film is about.
Well, yeah, it's just one small part, but they are so amazing. And, you know, there's two important parts. One, I have to, when I talk to audiences, it feels like, you know, we're talking about the Dark Ages. I have to say, when I grew up, there was literally no words for below your belly button. It was like down there. You had no language at all, no understanding of anything at all. Mm-hmm. And they changed all that. But it's also, they are so heroic because they basically have given the book for free to progressive women's groups anywhere around the world who want to adapt it to their own cultural needs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've really kind of walked the walk in terms of idealistic principles. They're just great.
Right. I think that, you know, there in the very beginning of the film, you did a really good job of setting up what life was like for the American woman before women's liberation. You know, and there are different people who talk about basically women were always fearful of pregnancy because there wasn't any birth control except for condoms, which of course always depended upon the male partner.
Yeah.
And wasn't always reliable. When women were raped or battered, they most often were not believed or were told it was their own fault. Your body was never okay the way it was because you were held to this standard. A lot of women, rarely could women have a real career. Maybe they could work for a while, but they were expected to marry and have children no matter what, and then to be housewives and take care of those kids. You know, there were so many things that we take for granted today that just didn't happen back then.
It's true. I mean, when I interviewed some of the women who were a little bit older, like Alex Kate Shulman, who's wonderful, and an author, she told me these amazing stories about in her period. I mean, if you graduated from college, which she did, and you were not engaged or married by the time you graduated, there would be these humiliating rituals at some of the colleges for the old maids, as they were. You know what I mean? At 21, we're talking. How crazy is that?
Right.
There were birth control pills, but in some places, like even in Massachusetts, it was illegal, where you had to be legally married in order to have birth control pills. So things were so contradictory and confusing. And the women are very honest about that because it was also the period of sexual liberation, but what a one-sided liberation.
Yeah, and they weren't always widely available, and like you said, they were difficult to get. That was way back in the very beginning of Planned Parenthood, even. Then one of the other things that's documented, really, you covered it all in this film, was women discovering that the pharmaceutical companies that were creating birth control pills knew that there were extreme dangers with the high levels of hormones that were included in those pills.
Right. Yeah. Alice Wolfson talked about that. I mean, that's one of the most inspiring parts to me, just like Oboes. What the main theme of the film is that ordinary people can make enormous change. And, you know, that was about a dozen women who went into Congress when they were having bills on the safety of a birth control pill. And the astonishing part is, of course, there were no women testifying about their own health experiences. There were no women at all. It was all the drug companies and the male doctors. And it was so crazy. So I hope you can hear me okay, because I keep getting a lot of static in my side. Can you hear me?
Yes,
okay?
We can hear you just fine.
Okay. And so they took it on, and they basically, over a period of many weeks, they just kept protesting and shutting down the hearings till they were heard, because that was the only way that women could actually participate in something that was so crucial to their own health.
Mary, how did you determine? Well, let me first mention some of the women who are in the film. Betty Friedan, who wrote The Feminine Mystique, the book that really sort of was the genesis of the movement. Politician Bell Abzug, Susan Brown Miller, who wrote Against Our Will, Men, Women, and Rape, which totally started the movement to change the way rape was treated in our culture. Kate Millett, a lesbian feminist poet and academic, very famous. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton and Shirley Chisholm, two of the first black women to ever be in Congress. Rita Mae Brown, Germaine Greer. There's a little appearance by Gloria Steinem. How did you come up with the list? How did
I started out really by thinking I wanted to do it thematically. So some of the women that you named, we used archival footage of it. We didn't have interviews with them
right.
a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the list for us was really about what were the subjects of the women's movement tackled that are not understood. So a lot of the choices were made around sort of choosing thematically. We also wanted to show that it wasn't just a New York phenomenon, because too many histories are too New York-centric. And we wanted to show that there were movements all over, you know, the movement sprouted sort of by magic everywhere. It was really like a tidal wave. So, for instance, I knew I wanted to cover the Jane Collective in Chicago, because Chicago was a very important start. Some of the earliest groups were there.
Talk about and that a little. Explain what the Janes were.
The Jane Collective is really an astounding story. It started actually in mid-60s, even before the women's movement had gathered any momentum, with Heather Booth. It was basically a underground abortion service helping women connect with doctors who would be willing to perform an abortion. And Heather Booth, who was a very big activist in that time, organized that. And by the time the women's movement sort of came into its fullness, like in late 60s, it evolved. And sometime, I'm not exactly certain of the year that this happened, but at a certain point they went from being a small service of helping women find doctors to one of the abortion doctors actually trained some of the women in the collective. And of course this is all while abortion was illegal. They would have all gone to jail if any of this had found out. And the collective went on for several years. It was finally, it was just amazing. Just an incredibly brave women who felt that if they didn't do this, these women would die, because, you know, the rate of women dying from illegal abortion. You know, the Jane Collective did a great job, but in many areas, you would be going to like a mafia doctor, and or worse. And living through the experience was iffy, to say the least.
Yes,
so it was an amazing story.
Yeah, or trying to affect your own abortion by taking weird drugs or using weird devices and things like that. And many women died that way as well.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I think that I am pretty well versed in the women's liberation movement, because I lived during that time and was quite aware of what was going on. But I actually didn't know about the Janes, so that was fascinating to me.
It's really interesting. Well, you know, our timing for the film, the one benefit of having to take so long to make it, having such a hard time raising the money, is that our timing is when people seem to be very eager to learn these stories. And I think we're just very lucky, because there's been enough kind of pushback or backlash or whatever you want to call it about women's rights over the last several years, which mm-hmm. is why we filmed in Texas, for instance, where mm-hmm. they were closing Planned Parenthood clinics when they mostly provide health for women, not, you know, and low-income women who don't have other options.
Right. Yeah, it was very interesting to me. You sort of bookended the film with contemporary footage of Texas, women in demonstrating in the Texas legislature, I believe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Noting that the pushback on abortion rights and birth control rights in the country right now is so huge. And a lot of us are caught, you know, sort of unaware at this, or we keep watching it and going, this is not really happening.
But it is happening. I mean, and they're also trying to outlaw different kinds of birth control, too. And I find the contradiction so upsetting and distressing, because, of course, people can have a debate about this subject, but at the same time, the people who don't think women should control their own bodies are, you know, very eager to cut back food stamps for poor families. And I don't see how you can put those two things together when you're basically making it impossible for women to control the size of their family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just tragic. And it's also true that there's been I don't think it's new, but it's so much better understood now. There's much more publicity about rape culture and what's happening on college campuses and in the military. So unfortunately for us, it took a long time to make the film. Fortunately for us, it's at a time when we've really gotten a lot of support and great press for the film, and it's really been quite wonderful.
Has it been, and the film, by the way, is showing here at CCA all this week, and you can go on CCA's website and see the times that it's showing. I believe it's at 2:30 today, our time. I was astonished by the amount of historical footage that you had to wrangle with, and I know that you're a documentary filmmaker. This is what you do. But was that daunting? Was it difficult to find all of that footage?
Yeah, Of course it was. But, you know, I've made other historical films. So I, you know, I'm kind of an archival nerd. I mean, I really love history. So, I mean, I'm kind of a weirdo because not every documentary filmmaker likes to do this. But mm-hmm. I actually love to. And so I went into a lot of places and a lot of people were incredibly gracious and kind. And I had, you know, the luxury of no budget is that you have time and I don't have to pay myself and I can just do all this work. So I found a lot of stuff in archives on the West Coast. I mean, some people helped me over the phone. I mean, that amazing section where you see that guy, the newscaster, uh-huh. making fun of the Women's March.
Yes.
That guy saying, you know, we gave them their right to vote, you know, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That was because somebody incredibly lovely in Iowa at the Historical Society there did the research real quickly for me and called me back 2 hours after I called her and said, I found the most amazing thing you've ever seen. You know, just because she was so into it and she was so kind. So you'll see, I thanked a lot of archival people in the film because I got a lot of help long distance. And a lot of people, when I was at their archives, just kept digging for me and being so helpful. But there was a lot of, this is a lot of coverage. It's just that, you know, if you know anything about archival footage, not every TV station saved their materials.
Right.
There's a few places where they did. But, you know, the women's movement was very big, and it was very clever about setting up some of these hilarious events that did get press. And it was an incredibly smart way to spread the movement, because this was before the Internet.
Right.
And they had no budgets, and they had no money. So it was all stamps and envelopes and phone calls. And then they would do some of these events, which would bring on more people all the time.
Right. One of the women mentioned and mimeograph machines. That,
exactly.
You know, that horrible fuzzy purple type.
Exactly, that your hands are covered with when you're done. You know.
Right. Has the film been getting a lot of showing in colleges, on college campuses?
Well, the theatrical is first.
Uh-huh.
We have hundreds of requests from colleges, and we
Excellent.
Know that it will be very successful there. But you kind of can't do both things at once. You
uh-huh.
have to do it sort of an orderly fashion, because the theaters aren't going to want it if you're already showing at the college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's step two. And the theatrical is going to continue for another couple months at least, probably into April, because mm-hmm. we just get more requests for it from theaters every day, which mm-hmm. is just amazing. And we've been doing really great. Certain theaters are just booked us everywhere. So
it's kind of
a miracle, actually. I'm very grateful.
It's not a miracle. It's a fabulous film, you know. I'm wondering about, has anybody approached you or have you considered doing a curriculum for high schoolers?
Yeah, that's what I'm working on now. And we're
Yay.
Actually teaming up with high school people because we've had a bunch of high schools, particularly in New York where we live, where
uh-huh.
we played for 5 weeks in the New York theaters, which for a documentary with no budget is astounding.
Right.
We just closed last week. And a lot of high schools. There's a lot of feminist high school groups.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'm always very interested in reaching even beyond. I mean, that's wonderful. I want to reach high school. But I also want to reach just history groups for people who are interested in anything, because people kept saying to me, you're going to go to all the women's studies places, right? And I was like, well, of course, but that's like the minimum. I mean, I don't really need to preach to the already converted. I think it's really important for people to learn history, period. And they'll find out all these things that they didn't know about the fact that feminists worked very hard for child care, which is something that they don't get any credit for, and all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that they also had internal struggles, which we also show, you know.
Right.
Issues about race and the issues about lesbians, and that it was really sometimes unpleasant and complicated, because life is complicated, and all movements are complicated, and all movements make mistakes. But what's important to me is for people to understand that they made so much progress and changed the world in so many ways. I mean, I say this all the time. It's kind of a cliche, but you know, when people don't appreciate the women's movement, you have to realize every time you see a young man walking down the street with a baby plastered on his chest, that's because of the women's
that's
movement.
Right.
It didn't happen from just natural evolution, you know.
That's
women
right.
demanded that men participate, and men have benefited from the women's movement in so many ways.
Right. And the wonderful thing about the film is that it can get the whole message across in a way. I remember years ago when I was working in the newspaper business, and some topic came up in the newsroom. We're all shouting back and forth at each other, and a young woman, much younger than I, said, "Oh, I'm not a feminist." And I wanted to go over and take her by the throat and say, "Honey,
yes.
you've got this job because of the feminist
move."
Exactly.
My first television job was from because of Title IX, because yeah. they finally started at a local Maine television PBS show. They started a women's program for half an hour. They got funding, and they had to hire women. You know,
yeah.
it wasn't, you know, these things aren't just because we're so smart, we got it. It's like there were a lot of laws passed, and there was a lot of activity that forced equality in many ways, not perfection, but so much the right start.
Right. In the film, one of the women says, you know, at the probably it was around 1970 that women were paid in the same jobs as men were paid 60% of what men make. And I think today the U.S. Labor Department says something like 78%. It's not perfect, but it is better.
It is definitely better. And there's women in so many different careers. I mean, when I started out in documentary filmmaking, women were scarce. There were a bunch of us. I wasn't unique by any means. But we were like the first, you know, there were people a little older than me who were in it even earlier. But it was really not taken for granted that you would ever be a person making the film yourself. That was just not the case.
Right.
And now it's so different.
Yeah,
Hollywood, where it's not different at all, unfortunately. You know, depends on what you look at. The number of films made from Hollywood that are about women, you know, so is still so disproportional.
It is, and it's very, it's funny among my friends. It's like, oh yay, it's a chick flick. Let's go, you know.
I know, but listen, The Hunger Games has made more money than anything else. That sort of shakes everyone up.
Yeah,
But it's still true that very few women get to direct movies, very few women, if you look at the crew list, which I always do. And I should mention, by the way, that, you know, I made a decision, because I've been in this business for a long time, I only wanted women cinematographers to shoot the interviews, because I just felt it was an important point to make, not to be PC about it, but because there aren't enough women DPs who are, you know, trained to do the kind of interviews we wanted to do, where they had to be lighters. It wasn't verite. It was, you know, it's more like what people do with a kind of Hollywood background. And Diana Taylor, who's from your area, was one of the first people who shot for us, and she was fantastic. She's such a talented cinematographer and filmmaker.
Yes, she is.
She's just great. And so she was great, and she did Muriel's, and then I hired this wonderful woman from California who did a whole bunch more of the film, Svetlana Shevko, who's shot a million great films.
Miriam.
And they were all so jitters.
I'm going to have to wrap it up here. I really appreciate you being with me. Mary Doerr is the producer and the director of She's Angry When She's Beautiful, now playing at CCA. And if you call 982-1338, you can get show times or go online to ccasantafe.org to see when it's on. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.